Payne and Pendergast with you. Text, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. You can watch on YouTube and Twitch as well. Seth, text message. We just got done talking about Mason Graham in headlines, the rookie defensive tackle out of Michigan, who is a Cleveland Brown, who is now best known for vomiting at rookie minicamp over the weekend. Seth, would you be surprised if Kenneth Grant, who is Mason Graham's Michigan teammate along the defensive line, he too a defensive tackle drafted 13th overall by the Dolphins. Would you be surprised if Kenneth Grant outperformed Mason Graham in the NFL?
No. I think Kenneth Grant looked a lot more like a guy. He moves and looks like a guy that might go in the top 15 of the NFL draft, more so than Mason Graham does. Mason Graham is, like, I don't like making predictions about any of these guys. You just never know until they get out there. He does a lot of things really, really well. He's just not, when you talk about stud defensive linemen, they tend to be kind of physically freakish, you know, and if they don't go in the first round, it's usually for some reason. There's diamonds in the rough, as there is with every other position, obviously. But like, there are, like, when it comes to the size and weight dynamic of it, the really good defensive linemen are just freaks of nature, the genuinely great ones. And Kenneth Grant looks more and moves more like a freak of nature than Mason Graham does. Now, Mason Graham has incredible technique and body awareness and all of that stuff. I'm not going to be overly surprised if Mason Graham ends up being a really good defensive lineman in the NFL. There was some weird stuff with him though, too, where, you know, he was listed at 320 during the season. He shows up at the combine weighing 297. And then at the draft, when you look at him at the draft, he's got a doughy face and a kind of a goofy look about him.
Yeah.
And then he pukes in his helmet at training at minicamp. I don't know. I didn't get exactly why people were so authoritatively assured that Mason Graham was a better player than Kenneth Grant.
Yeah.
Other than Mason Graham had been doing it for a longer time. Kenneth Grant kind of got better as his college career progressed.
Feels like Mason Graham, yeah, he'll be around for 10 years playing in the NFL. I just know that he's ever going to be worthy of the fifth overall pick in the draft. You know,
right, yeah.
So,
and yet I love the way he plays.
Sure.
He's a classic guy. You know, we used to say this about, because, you know, we were a smaller college, and you'd get kids out of Texas. And it was awesome when you got a kid from Texas because they were just freaking strong as ox. Mm-hmm. They'd been on their high school weightlifting team and everything. But you always had to wonder, you had to wonder exactly what their ceiling was, because high school football in Texas is so good. And because their technique was so much better than a lot of other places, that you just didn't know how much more development they had in them. And Mason Graham kind of feels like that version of an NFL player. He was so refined as a college kid that you just wonder exactly how much more can he stack on top of it if he's got physical limitations.
One other text, then we'll get to Derek Carr's retirement over the weekend in just a second. But this goes back to the Lance McCullers story. Lance McCullers receiving reportedly a death threat not just to him but his kids, after giving up 7 earned runs in a third of an inning on Saturday in a game the Astros lost 13-9. I'm going to echo what this text I'm about to read. I kind of thought the same thing. Not that it should be done anytime, a death threat, but when I heard about it, it just sounded very random. Why McCullers against the Reds in a meaningless game in early May?
Right.
You know, I thought the same thing. I'm like, that's bad. You should never do it. Never, ever, ever. A random Saturday game on May 10th, you know,
if
like
that's going to be what
threat.
Elicits the emotion that all of a sudden this guy's going to go completely off the rails.
Right.
We're dealing with a genuine psycho here is the answer, Sean. Yeah.
Or an angry gambler.
Or is somebody who lost money on
like an angry gambler.
Like,
that's right.
Still a genuine psycho, but
yes.
Right. More so than in the past, you've got more people that are out there just gambling these days. So it's one of the many effects of gambling being more just
harassment.
And more common now is there's going to be more harassment, probably, unfortunately.
Your reaction when Derek Carr announced he was retiring from football over the weekend?
Huh. That was my
me too.
Yeah.
okay. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. You know, and honestly, my reaction was, should I be having more of a reaction about this?
Right.
I don't. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, good luck to you.
Well,
yeah.
It's a weird thing because the shoulder injury that Derek Carr has was treated very strangely by the media. There was a lot of speculation that, you know, the Derek Carr self-reporting a shoulder injury right after the draft, you know, like right around the draft, where, you yeah. know, there had been talk that the Saints were looking to get out from the Derek Carr business, which is probably not a, you know, it's probably a wise thing to do if he were to. Derek Carr has, like, for the last 10 years has been a guy who's making way too much money for the amount of games that he wins or doesn't win, more appropriately. But this was Derek Carr about a week or so ago, maybe, at a church service. He was speaking at a church somewhere, I believe in Las Vegas, and actually was talking about his shoulder injury at this church service.
Yes, I have to say this. I hate that I have to say this, but I have to say this. Yes, I have a shoulder injury, despite what ESPN says. And what some lady on a podcast might think.
Diana Rossini.
Diana Rossini. Yeah.
I have an MRI report to prove it. The team knows about it. We've been in constant communication. There's nothing wrong. We're figuring it out, and we're going to go forward with that. Is that okay? And I've been dealing with this, and I've been dealing with people lying about me. I've been dealing with them saying this and that. And I'm like, Lord, why do I have to continue to deal with this nonsense? Like, what is going on? And I say that to preface with, you never know what someone's really going through. And so why do we continually try to attack people? And I would say attack people that are trying to do things maybe the right way. Why do we continually try? Why do we always have to have an opinion? Why do we always, Twitter and Instagram has ruined things for some people. Because now all these people think that they have voices that have to be heard. And so, like, some people's voices don't need to be heard right now.
Okay, and just what he was referring to there, ESPN yep. and a woman on a podcast. The woman on the podcast is Diana Rossini. There had been speculation that he was essentially lying about this shoulder injury, that he was doing try to get up and out of New Orleans.
I guess some of the speculation was that his camp was were the people putting the stuff out there about it just to try to force the Saints to do something. Yeah. That's neither here nor there. I think that, for one, obviously he was answering a question about his shoulder. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he was answering a question about his shoulder there. It wasn't like he came into the speech. He wasn't like on the church program that morning and said, "Today, Derek Carr will speak about his shoulder.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounded like he was answering a question. Yeah. I think that the thing about Carr, and this is, he's not a young athlete anymore, but this is what comes with being a quarterback. And I've always wondered just why he seemed to have a particular grudge against the way he was talked about in the media. Mm-hmm. And there comes a point where at some point you've just got to figure out a way to put the blinders on and accept that, yes, that's the reality of it. And if you need to combat it, you got to use the appropriate size chip on your shoulder. And it's a really hard thing for a quarterback to manage is, all right, how much of this do I use as fuel versus how much do I just fixate on it? And he's just, his entire career, it feels like he's been in this battle against perceived disrespect. Mm-hmm. The best way to combat that is to go out and be a really, really good quarterback.
Yeah.
And he just never actually got to that level.
No.
So he's, if anything, he was vastly, regardless of how you feel about him as a quarterback, he made way more money than you would expect for what his actual production on the field
was. He made nearly $200 million. I think once it's all said and done, it'll be over $200 million because I think the two sides are still haggling over what money he gets to keep. I think they're going to let him keep this $10 million roster bonus he just got in March as a parting gift of some sort. But he didn't win a playoff game. He only played in one playoff game. I guess to be fair, the best season he had was in 2016, his third year, where he was third in the MVP balloting, but he got hurt at the end of the year. They played the Texans in the playoffs that year with Connor Cook at quarterback. A Connor Cook, Brock Osweiler playoff game took place back in the 2016 postseason.
Yeah. I just, and then people tend to lose their appetite for somebody who's I know, who's got a little bit of a persecution complex.
Yes.
That's like a whole thing. Well, also, if you're presenting yourself as so devout and all about the things that really matter, and you try to, you know, as a Christian, you try to you don't want to be worldly and care about all of these other things, which include like what people are saying about you as a high-priced quarterback in
on
the NFL.
Instagram, yeah.
Right, yeah, that like, oh, and I just keep getting persecuted, and it's, boy, it's... It's no different than people that get, you know, sent to prison and assassinated for their religious beliefs. It's a hard thing for devout professional athletes to try to tiptoe that tightrope between, you know, staying focused on your faith but also not being sucked into worldly things. And it's all worldly. I don't know if it's it's very, very hard.
I wonder if if Aaron Rodgers, if part of why he's delaying on signing anywhere, you know, mainly Pittsburgh, that's still the rumored place that he's going to land. Pittsburgh and New Orleans now have disastrous quarterback situations. The Steelers quarterbacks are Mason Rudolph, Skylar Thompson, and they drafted Will Howard out of Ohio State. And the Saints quarterback situation is the Hayner kid out of Fresno they drafted a couple of years ago, Spencer Rattler, who they drafted last year, and then Tyler Shuck, who they drafted this year. And they put all three of their faces up on a tweet yesterday, and I said, as a QB face expert, as a QB face forensics expert, I can tell you that is a three-win team this year based on those three faces right there. And the only reason they're winning three games is they're in the NFC South. That's it. That team is screwed. If you want to bet on a team having the number one overall pick, the Saints, quarterbacked by any three of those guys right now, Shuck, Rattler or Hayner. Ugh, that's horrible.
You like to do before you put in any bet, you like to put in the starting quarterback and the head coach. I feel like Kellen Moore doesn't really grade high on the coach face.
No, that's
he's got a little bit of a Liam Cohen vibe.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Just like, or you're like, all right, this guy's your leader of men.
Right. Okay.
Maybe secretary of your fraternity or something, but I don't know about head football coach.
Right, definitely ate paste at one point in elementary school, probably, I would imagine.
I wonder if you were Aaron Rodgers, would you feel better about the Saints or the Steelers purely from a football standpoint?
Well, I think some of it for me, if I were Aaron Rodgers, would be with the Saints, honestly, would be the chance to play in warm weather and indoors. You know, being the NFC South versus being outside.
He's never had that in his career. Yeah. Well, he's an older guy, especially.
Yeah, I mean, I know he played in Green Bay his entire career in New York, and he's been out. But he's never been on an indoor team before like that. I think he'd have a better chance to thrive there than I don't think either situation is great for a quarterback right now. I mean, the Steelers just traded George Pickens. They got less talented offensively this week.
I think if you look at, whether Brandon Cooks decides to stay or force himself to be traded yet again, who knows? But with Olave and Brandon Cooks, and they've bolstered the offensive line with the Saints.
Yeah.
For me, the Saints would be my choice if I were Aaron Rodgers. If I set everything else aside, I think I'd like the Saints.
And I'd rather play for Kellen Moore than Arthur. You know, Arthur Smith is the OC
in
Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather play for Kellen Moore. So we'll see. It's funny you mentioned Brandon Cooks. I did think about him yesterday as Derek Carr is retiring. Cooks is with the Saints now, for those who don't know. And we all remember this. This was a little over 2 years ago. This was not all that long ago. Brandon Cooks not wanting to stick around for a rebuild in Houston.
For me, I'm not looking at it as far as, you know, being a part of a rebuild. However that looks, that's where I trust my camp and my representation to be able to get a mat from here and, you know, to there to see what that looks like, to be a part of something that's a trusted plan. But I'm not going into this offseason thinking like I want to be a part of another rebuild.
How were your 2 years with the Cowboys, Brandon Cooks? Were they good the last couple of years? How were they?
At least it wasn't a rebuild, I suppose. No. Would you rather be on a faltering dynasty? Right. I mean, it's not a dynasty. It's been a dynasty of mediocrity.
Yeah.
That they sustained their dynasty of mediocrity instead of being a genuine rebuild.
Yep.
It is strange to see Brandon Cooks back in New Orleans. I mean, after his long, long saga. traded to the Patriots, then traded to the Rams, then traded to the Texans, then traded to the Cowboys. But now, of his own free will,
yes,
he goes back to where it all started.
It's in New Orleans. Circle
where
of
he
life.
Always belongs.
Yeah,
yes.
circle of life. So Derek Carr retires. So I tease this into the segment, Seth. I came up with the Mount Rushmore of bag getters in the NFL. These are four players who were part of at most one playoff win in their career and got a ton of money, at most one playoff win. So these are the four. You know what, Ben? Maybe this is a good way to head into it. I'll acknowledge these four guys. How about that, Ben? We'll do an early start here on Acknowledge Me. I'm going to acknowledge the four best bag getters in NFL history. Kirk Cousins. Mm. How about this, Seth? Kirk Cousins made upwards of, I'm doing the math here real quick, almost $300 million he's made. And he's still got more coming to him in his contract with the Falcons. Kirk Cousins has made nearly $300 million. He has one playoff win in his career. One. And he lost. He was last in the postseason a couple years ago for a 13-win Vikings team that lost to Daniel Jones.
That's right. That's right.
In the playoffs.
That was a game that made Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Okay. Daniel Jones. He got Daniel Jones paid. He got Daniel Jones on that bag getter team. I didn't put Daniel Jones on this Mount Rushmore. Maybe I should have. But I think Kirk Cousins is the patron saint of bag getters. You know?
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, annoyingly has kind of confirmed all of the narratives about him along the way.
Yeah.
At any given point, that people bring up stats about, like, no, you're being too mean to Kirk Cousins. No, it's not his fault. But then you can only stack up so many primetime drub performances or just the lack of playoff success. But for finally, you have to accept, no, he is what he is.
Right.
He's a highly competent NFL quarterback. But he's still Kirk Cousins.
He's
just highly competent, which gets you a lot of money in the modern
NFL. It gets
NFL.
You a lot of money. He got a $180 million contract from the Falcons, who then, weeks later, drafted a quarterback with the eighth overall pick in the draft.
Even the Falcons couldn't even keep it up. They were like, no, he's been maligned. What are you talking about, Kirk Cousins? People have been unfair to him. But just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Like, I see these stories of, like, in Minnesota, they're not quite sure if they're going to roll with J.J. McCarthy yet. They might trade for Kirk Cousins. I'm like, you're one of the teams that experienced this already. What are you doing?
I'll tell you what, that quarterback series on Netflix, it was tough because you come away very impressed with Kirk Cousins. He showed just how tough he was and how much punishment he took, how much he prepared.
Yeah, the time he puts in, no doubt.
But you also saw that, man, he's just that classic case of book smart versus street smarts.
Yeah.
And you feel like he does everything right, but you just, there's something about him that's just, he's a clockwork orange. You know, like he does all the stuff right, but there's just no juice.
Nope.
He's just, it's not, it, there's just, it's a facade. And no matter what you do, like the kid that gets really good grades in school, but he's just not actually all that smart.
Right.
He just studies really, really hard.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. You feel bad for that kid.
Right.
When, you know, you have to kind of tell him, like, listen, there's a lot of kids that don't get as good of grades as you. They just got more juice, all right?
Yeah.
Good job. Good job on your straight A's. You're just not that smart.
That is a good analogy, for sure. All right, so Kirk Cousins first on the Mount Rushmore of bag getters. Guys who've been paid to do very, very little through many, many years. Derek Carr, we will acknowledge you right now. Yeah. 77-92 in his career. Made four Pro Bowls, although Pro Bowl quarterback, there's so many guys that drop out of the Pro Bowl. Like, if we could go look at the list of quarterbacks who've made at least a Pro Bowl out there, it's pretty jarring. Had a really good year in 2016, and other than that, has piled up a bunch of stats to do not a whole lot. One playoff appearance, a loss to the Cincinnati Bengals in the 2021 playoffs, a game in which Derek Carr completed 53.7% of his passes. So,
gosh,
not just a playoff loss, but a loss that he was bad in.
And the most notable is it really started to go downhill for him are some of the fourth down decisions that he's made.
Yes.
Just throwing the ball out of bounds on fourth and goal.
Yep.
Some really book smart street with no street smarts types of scenarios.
Big time, big time. All right, so that's Derek Carr number two. We're getting texts. Don't worry, texters. The name that keeps coming in is going to be on this sculpture. Not yet, though. Number three on the Mount Rushmore of bag getters, Deshaun Watson. He, too, has won one playoff game in his career. To his credit, he was outstanding in that game and made a lot of big plays. It was for the Texans against Buffalo. But how about this? Three Pro Bowls and 104 passer rating for the Texans. No Pro Bowls, an 80 passer rating, and a 9-10 record in three seasons. Played a total of 19 games for the Cleveland Browns, and the Browns have paid him $137 million. He's still got another $100 million coming to him, $92 million coming to him. He got another $50 tacked on with the Texans. Seth, he has thus far been paid $188 million and still has more coming. And it might be out of football. Deshaun Watson might have played his last snap in the NFL.
Plus, he's got all that cheesesteak money, too.
That's true.
You know, now, he earned that on his own. Mm-hmm. He screwed over some Houston landlords when he left. But he did. Other than that, he's rapidly turning into that. But now, I guess, I don't think, for current guys, yes. But in the long-term run of things, I don't think he's got another big contract in him.
No.
I don't think he'll be, of guys who are either currently or just retired this weekend in the league, he's on it now, but I don't think he's on the all-time bag getter.
We'll see. For purposes of this conversation, he makes the cut. The last one, Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
Sam Bradford is a classic bag getter, man. He is the classic former number one overall pick who rode that label to bilking four teams out of millions of dollars, including $65 million from the Rams. And keep in mind, he was the last number one overall pick before the rookie wage scale went in place. Mm-hmm. Like, Sam Bradford is a big reason why there is now a rookie wage scale. Before 2011, rookies negotiated for their contracts with teams as if they were free agents almost. I mean, obviously they weren't. They had, you know, the teams drafted their rights, but they got paid like veterans got paid. Like, Sam Bradford got paid a veteran, high-level quarterback contract at the time. He has made roughly 40, 25, about $130 million with the Rams, the Vikings. The Rams, Vikings, Eagles, and Cardinals all thought at some point Sam Bradford is the answer to our prayers. He was 34-48-1 as a pro, 34-48-1.
What's the chronology with him? Was he with the Eagles and then went to the Vikings or vice versa?
He was with the Eagles.
Eagles and then the Vikings.
And then the Vikings, because the Vikings lost Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
And they traded for Sam Bradford.
Well, and that
Eagles.
Was the one where the Eagles, when he got that contract with the Eagles, at that point, remember the Eagles had like three guys who were all making a boatload of money at quarterback on the depth chart. It was a really weird scenario.
They had signed Sam Bradford. And then they signed Chase Daniel to a very high-level backup. And then they traded up and drafted Carson Wentz.
Yeah,
so they had Wentz, Daniel, and Bradford all on the team at the same time.
The total salary cap spending for their quarterbacks was huge. But you thought, okay, well, that's it for Sam Bradford.
Right.
That'll be the last big, weird contract he gets. And then he got a huge one with the Vikings. Good for you, Sam Bradford.
Yeah, and then he wound up with the Cardinals. So, yeah, I think Sam Bradford and Kirk Cousins are, I think, like the – and Derek Carr, the patron saints of something like this.
The real shame about Deshaun Watson was that one of the most iconic plays I've ever seen by a quarterback was one where he got kicked in the eyeball and then threw a touchdown pass.
Yeah, against the Raiders.
And it was against the Raiders, who I believe Derek Carr was the quarterback of the Raiders in that game still.
Yeah,
and it was one of those games where you thought, okay, yeah, this is what sets a guy like Deshaun Watson apart from a guy like Derek Carr. And yet here they are on both etched in stone on the same mountain.
The Payne and Pendergast Mount Rushmore of bag getters. Yeah, so there you go, man. So we acknowledge those four. I think Deshaun's on there mostly because somehow – he got $230 million guaranteed while being sued by two dozen women. You know, that's the ultimate bag getting right there. When you can get the highest guarantee in NFL history while dealing with two dozen lawsuits, you deserve some sort of acknowledgement.
Well, and then never performing after that.
Correct.
Statistically, he's been just about identical to Davis Mills in that stretch of time since he was traded.
Yeah, man.
It's like Davis Mills, slightly worse in most categories, but on a bang for the buck dynamic, he is crushing Deshaun Watson right now.
Chase Daniel, people are texting in the bag getter Mount Rushmore. Chase Daniel earned $41 million for seven starts. But I don't think anybody was ever offended by Chase Daniel's contracts that he got. You know what I mean? Like,
he was getting respectable backup money, yeah. But for a guy that was rarely even used as a backup, it just seemed like he must be an all-time solid dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and was very good. If your goal was to get paid without taking any punishment, because yeah. I respect that. Like, if you know what? I'm making $6 million this year, and I'm not getting hit. I'm not getting hit in practice. I'm not getting hit in games. The only time I get hit on the sidelines is if I happen to not be looking out on the field and somebody runs out of bounds and bumps into me. Like, yeah, no, Chase Daniel, 41. I thought it was more than, even more than the 41 million. Someone said Albert Haynesworth. Yeah, it feels like this thing is more a quarterback thing than, I know there are guys out there. Albert Haynesworth, yes, got 100 million from the Redskins and then turned into hot garbage as a player. So, yeah, different kind of bag getter for sure.
But he actually, that was a classic. I mean, his performance in his contract year was such that it at least he demanded it, that like he commanded that contract.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was a one-time deal. After that, he kind of kicked around after
he did.
After the one-time deal.
Yep. He did really good.
Getting multiple contracts is, and Deshaun got a contract with the Texans 6 months before he started to force his way off of that contract.
Yeah, and then the Browns.
So he ended up getting two big contracts.
Mm-hmm. Someone said Case Keenum, bag getter. Case got a big deal with the Broncos, for sure.
Right, yeah, but Case was also, he was getting paid commensurate with what I think the league thought of him at various times. You know, because people might say Ryan Fitzpatrick too. I think those guys, it wasn't top of the line money the way it was for some of those other guys without any performance to back it up. Those guys were getting respectable deals based on what they had turned themselves into as players. I cannot with good conscience allow Case Keenum anywhere near this conversation.
Here was the criteria for the Mount Rushmore bag getters was you had to have a ceiling of just one playoff win in your career. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like Sam Bradford didn't make a playoff. These other three guys, Derek Carr didn't win a playoff game. He only made one. Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins, each one playoff game. Case Keenum was the author of one of the most iconic miracle plays in NFL history to get to an NFC title game. Now, granted, they got smoked in that NFC title game, but he at least got there with the Minneapolis miracle with Stephon Diggs. So that alone gets him off of the radar for the bag getter Mount Rushmore. All right, let's get to the other. Reggie's texting in. Reggie Adetula. Matt Flynn, another legend at the bank in his own way. Matt Flynn, who got a nice contract from the Seahawks, who then drafted Russell Wilson, who became the starter, and Matt Flynn never saw the field. Matt Flynn had like two good games for the Packers at the end of the previous season, and the Seahawks were like, here you go. Here's 3 years, $30 million, which was a lot of money back then.
But what ultimately ended up making $19 million over the course of his career. So it wasn't, he's not even close to some of these guys in terms of what he got versus, you know, Rob Johnson. Because then we could start throwing guys like Rob Johnson in. Yeah. You know, Rob Johnson had one nice stretch with the Jaguars, got traded for the pick that became Fred Taylor, got a big contract up in Buffalo, and didn't do anything at all. But it was just a one-time deal, and his career earnings pale in comparison to these other guys' career earnings.
They're invited to the bag getter convention, but they'll never be the keynote speaker at the bag getter convention.
Those guys,
yeah. All right, some other acknowledgments from over the weekend. We acknowledge big performances. Ronnell Blanco, huge start by Ronnell Blanco yesterday. I don't think it's an exaggeration here. You know, 40 games, what are they, 39 games in? The Astros are 20-19 right now. That might have been early on here, one of the biggest starting performances of the year out of a pitcher for the Astros. Ronnell Blanco, 8 innings, 2 hits, no runs, a walk, and 11 strikeouts for a team, Seth, that on Saturday, Lance McCullers' third of an inning start that he had the internet abuzz with, like, okay, here's the names that are going to be going back and forth from Sugar Land to Minute Maid Park all week. You know, that start by Lance turned the Astros pitching, especially in a stretch here where they're in the middle of a 17 straight day stretch where they're playing games every day. That Lance McCullers start could have had and may still, to a degree, have a ripple effect on the bullpen and everything else. Ronnell Blanco, to me, the start of the year yesterday. Given everything swirling around the team.
Given everything and facing a team where, look, they have, as we saw, incredible pitch selection.
Yeah.
They made it really hard for Hunter Brown and then to do the good work that he did. And then Lance McCullers threw 14 pitches before anybody swung at a pitch in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 3-run homer when it finally happened. Ronel Blanco, over his last six starts, does have a 3.03 ERA. The biggest question has just been, okay, how deep can he go into games?
Yeah.
Because he's had, in that stretch, he had three performances where he only pitched five innings. In the last four, he's gone six innings or more in three of those four. And over the last six, he's got a 3.03 ERA.
Yeah.
I'm feeling better and better about him. And remember, his offseason routine changed. That felt like an easy excuse early on. It started to lose its luster. But you look at it now with some distance between now and the start of the season, you're like, okay, maybe it was as simple as that, that he just wasn't comfortable, and now he's getting back more into his groove.
Yeah, it was good to see, for sure. All right, a couple more here. Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter, who, as we know from the magnificent Gladstone, I have a reason that we're acknowledging him. But this is always an opportunity to re-listen to the Magnificent Gladstone. The Magnificent Gladstone thinks that Travis Hunter is going to change the sport of football as we know it. I've got another reason for acknowledging him, though. But let's relive the magic of the Magnificent Gladstone.
You know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar. And really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right, its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him.
Okay, that's a good. We're good.
This poor kid. Every time I listen to that, more and more I put myself in Travis Hunter's shoes. We're just, you're like, all right, man, just, okay, can we settle it down a little? Travis Hunter, I feel, would be the first person to just tell, almost say what coaches are usually saying. Like, hey, let's just focus on the task at hand, okay? We're not trying to build Rome in a day. We just got to – let's go out and have a can you let me go out and just get my rookie mini camp in, all right? One foot in front of the other, all right, coach? Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
My son's their new thing on the group text is to text where they're going or what they're doing and talk about how it's a statement of how they're going to move. Like Sammy texts it. He's like, hey, going to get bombed at Lizards. And that's a statement as to how I'm going to move. Like, they love
a lot of people questioned whether I'd have the endurance to keep up a full-time job and also this.
Yeah.
But no, I can do it.
It's a statement of how. Here's why we're acknowledging Travis Hunter. There was a post from a woman named Sandy Hawkins Combs on social media this weekend. And she took a picture with a nice young man sitting next to her on a plane flying back to Denver. So presumably Travis Hunter, rookie minicamp this weekend in Jacksonville. He's flying back to Denver to go to Boulder, maybe to pack up his things or whatever. And this woman said, I had the most wonderful flight home from Denver. I met the nicest young man who sat next to me. He offered to put my bag in the overhead. He helped me out with my tray. He was always saying yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. Anyone would be proud to have him as a son or grandson. He was so polite. People walking by were saying congratulations and great job and even taking pictures with him. I turned and asked him, who am I sitting next to? I looked at his Jaguar pants, smiled, and asked, are you an athlete? He smiled and said, I'm Travis. Yes, I was drafted by the Jags. I already told my son that I want his jersey, this woman said. He was so humble and down to earth. I never would have guessed he was a professional athlete. Jags, you did good. I will be buying tickets. United Airlines, thank you for my seat assignment. And the two of them took a pleasant picture together. Travis Hunter, this goes to your point, Seth.
Yeah.
I hate that the Magnificent Gladstone is painting us into a corner where we have to root against this kid. You know, like,
right.
I really like this Travis Hunter.
Yeah, I'm mad at the Browns,
too.
I'm mad at the Browns for not drafting Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
When you guys could have rewritten the rules of football.
Yes.
Everybody would have trusted you to rewrite, reshape the sport and defy expectations.
Yeah. That's nice, man. Travis Hunter's a good kid. The other thing, like, how did Travis Hunter end up so awesome being around Shedeur all that time?
Well, I don't, like, you know, there's the other part. I really felt bad for Shiloh Sanders throughout this entire draft process.
You did?
Because even as Shedeur would point out how everything, you know, you should expect greatness because of everything he and his father have accomplished. I'm like, what about Shiloh?
Yeah. Poor Shiloh, like, man.
Or people would argue that, hey, he's got that Deion Sanders DNA. How could you not expect Shedeur to be great in the NFL? We're like, well, what about Shiloh?
Yeah.
What's he, like, was he adopted? Well, I don't understand. If we're going the DNA argument, why is Shiloh being left out of the conversation?
Even the couple of times, too, that Deion would get asked about Shedeur, he almost felt inconvenienced to have to throw Shiloh in there. That's what it felt like. He's like, yeah, Shiloh too.
He's upset. Why couldn't you take the honorable route taken by so many people like Cooper Manning and whatnot?
Right.
Just leave the sport completely.
That's it, man. That's it. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
Smart move. It looks like they were sitting in the back row of first class on a United flight.
Smart move
because you have no guilt about using the seat back, reclining your seat.
Yeah.
Now, the back row and coach, you never want because you can't recline ever.
Oh, you're upright.
Even if there's nobody behind you, but you can't recline.
You're upright.
I'm very, very reluctant to ever, ever, ever recline my seat. So that back row, whenever you get an opportunity to do it,
What percentage of the kerfuffles that we see on airlines these days do you think are started by somebody leaning back in their seat? I know it's legal to do, but there almost seems to be people think there's an unwritten rule about it. You know,
I don't have a problem. Like, I understand it's part of the deal if somebody in front of you reclines.
Yeah,
it's when they do it violently.
Yeah,
a lot of people don't realize. Like, no, don't
drink
whack
on the tray
back when the guy that, especially if you got a 6'4" person sitting behind you.
Yeah,
is almost tore both patellar tendons on a flight to Topeka once.
Yep. Or somebody.
I've never been to Topeka. I don't know if they have.
Don't go. Yeah, I've been. Yeah. Don't go. Or someone with a glass or a cup of red wine on the tray behind you. Like when you jerk back like that, and it slides around, almost slides in your lap. That kind
if
of
you
thing.
Must recline in coach, first do the show. You got to do the body language that looks like you're about to recline. Maybe look to your back a little bit, and then slowly ease your way on.
Good
back.
Advice, Seth.
Don't just fwah.
Right, right, right.
Fwah.
You might
Jordan Alvarez to me. Both patellar tendons partially torn.
That's tough, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast. There's one acknowledgement we didn't get to. One particular person at rookie camp who wasn't a rookie who is getting a lot of attention. Is this somebody who we should be paying attention to in the offensive line competition? We will get to that coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll read some of your texts. People like talking about other people's money. We did the bag getter Mount Rushmore in the NFL in the previous segment. If you missed it, you can get it on the Odyssey Rewind feature or on the Payne and Pendergast podcast. We also had an interview with Nick Caserio last week, Texans GM. You can get that interview on our podcast on the Odyssey app.
Yeah. That seems like forever ago.
I know. It was less than a week ago. And one of the questions we asked him was about, hey, who are the guys that you see a major difference in this year transforming their bodies? We asked about Blake Fisher specifically, but he offered up a couple other names, and one of the names has turned into a pretty fun story heading into this part of the calendar for the Texans. Take a listen.
Can we give it to D'Amico?
D'Amico.
I said this the other day. He would definitely beat my ass, so I'll try to avoid. But no, he looks good. Blake looks good. He's been here. I'll give you two other players, actually. So Ladarius Henderson has actually sort of reshaped his body. I think nobody's worked harder than LD. I know he lost his whole year last year because he was dealing with foot injuries, but I think he's lost, 15 to 20 pounds of body fat. He wasn't able to do a lot, but I would say the level of commitment and focus that he's shown, I mean, honest to God, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And I would say
And then he went on to talk about Kamari Lassiter, but Ladarius Henderson, Seth, Caserio over the moon with his praise for the offseason that the former seventh-round pick from last year's draft class out of Michigan had. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Saturday, asked about Ladarius Henderson, and echoes a lot of what Nick Caserio said to Seth and myself.
Very encouraged with Ladarius and just how he's went about the process just throughout the offseason, throughout the entire season, just seeing Ladarius show up every day, smile on his face, having that joy. Like he he gives me energy, right? Just seeing him in the building, how excited he is to just work, get better weight room on the field. Just, we wanted to get him out here in the rookie minicamp because he didn't have this time last year. I just get on the field. So trying to get him just the extra time to get out, get some coaching sessions with Coach Popovich. And he's doing a great job so far. And I'm just excited to see, you know, how this journey continues to go for him, because it's definitely headed in the right direction. And he's done everything the right way, everything you could possibly do to put yourself in position to have a successful year. He's done that.
There are no sacred cows on the interior of that offensive line. Like, I know right. He was drafted as a tackle, but he's got a shot here, I think.
Yeah, and he played both guard and tackle in college, and they look at him as a guard. He's the thing about Ladarius Henderson that intrigues people so much is that he's got freakishly long arms and wingspan and hand size, all of that stuff. He just wasn't as consistent in college as a guy that's going to get drafted higher. But I think that He's still got upside. If you look at some of his measurables, that if you can do something with those long arms and just kind of have something click, there's definitely intrigue there. So the two guys I think have been left out of conversations in the offseason maybe too much are, I guess, Ladarius Henderson, just because there's a groundswell of him being a cult favorite amongst a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it's hard to ignore that. People are very intrigued by Ladarius Henderson. But as somebody on one of my live streams this weekend brought up Braxton Berrios, and I realized, yeah, you know what? Braxton Berrios as a returner could be really, really big for the Texans. And also as a guy that might get time as a receiver too, just because he's going to be on the squad. He's never had more than 20 or so receptions in a season. He's very, very small, but he is very, very fast and has had some huge plays as a returner in his time.
Oh, yeah. No, he was an all-pro returner at one point. I forget if it was for the Dolphins or the Jets, but he has been an all-pro returner at one point. He might be, for this roster, what Steven Sims was for last year's roster heading into the season. They carried seven receivers, and one of them was Steven Sims, whose sole role on the team was to return kicks. Now, he didn't finish the year on the Texans. He finished the year on the Ravens, but it could be a similar type of thing.
I think Braxton Berrios is being ignored, perhaps inordinately so, because people don't want to get they don't want to tweet about Braxton Berrios, because then they're going to get thrown into the world of his girlfriend's social media.
Alex Earle.
Yeah. Alex Earle, who is just wildly famous on social media. But that means for you and I and probably 90% of our listeners, we don't know what the hell people are talking about.
Yeah.
But you get into that realm where, like, all right, I'm going to say something nice about Braxton Berrios, and all of a sudden I'm going to have 5,000 Twitter followers who just are Alex Earle fans.
Right.
And as soon as I criticize Braxton Berrios for something, oh, the hell that your life will become.
Yeah, yes. the day I knew something was up the day they signed Braxton Berrios, and Jesse Watt, one of the members of the morning team over on Mix 96.5, was super excited about it. She's like, oh my God, the Texans signed Braxton Berrios. I'm like, I look at him, he's handsome, I know that. And then she's like, Alex Earle, yeah. So excited.
He is an X factor, though. I think that, you know, Jalen Knoll's probably, you know, obviously Jalen Knoll can be a returner as well. So some definite competition for the return position this year.
Mm-hmm. Bag getters. We talked about this in the previous segment. Kevin Cobb, former U of H Coug, who was a starting quarterback for the Eagles for a bit. Post Donovan McNabb.
You know what? This is what's happening. I feel like people keep sending these suggestions in.
Yeah.
And what they're getting is not necessarily, these are not bag getters. They're just evidence of how much quarterbacks get paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's if you stick around long enough as a backup quarterback or as a fringe starter, then you're gonna end up making a good amount of money over the years.
Does Brock Osweiler qualify in any way for this convention that we're putting together?
Because it's also got to be a two. You've got to do it twice, I think.
Yep.
You've got to get two contracts at least, and then without the career production that really goes behind it. So Kevin Cobb played as a backup for 7 years, got $29 million. Like, yeah, that's... Backup quarterbacks make a boatload of money these days.
Yeah, the Eagles made him their starter at one point, but it didn't last very long. I know that.
Yeah.
People suggesting Matt Flynn. Okay, Ed Reed, Texans bag getter and highway robbery. And then someone got Ed Reed's bag because he left a bag of money on the front seat of his
car. That's right.
Remember that?
What was it? Was it $20,000 or something?
I think it was 50. I want to say it was 50. I think it was 50. Who's rolling around with 50K? Well, I know who's rolling around with 50K.
That is old school right there.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
These kids these days are running around with 50K in crypto or something if they want to, yeah. If they need non-taxable dollars for whatever reason.
In February of 2014, former NFL player Ed Reed reported that $50,000 in cash was stolen from his car in Houston. I just remember at that stage, because that was February of 2014, so it was after the season in which Ed Reed bellyached his way out of town, and became, so he must have still had a place here in Houston, and I just remember not feeling all that sorry for him, and I don't think the listeners felt all that sorry for him as well. Hey, man, you stole $5 million from the Texans, the least that a Houstonian can do. I feel like that Houstonian, you know, kind of like Robin Hood, you know?
You know what I remember from that era was so many people trying to tell me I was naive to not know, like, whatever, you know, dastardly things Ed Reed was planning to do with $50,000 in cash. Look, there are plenty of, like, mildly illegal things you can do with $50,000 in cash that might involve trying to help a contractor, you know, not report all his income or something.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to involve drugs or getting somebody murdered.
No.
Okay?
No.
That was $50,000 doesn't all of a sudden mean that you're spending it for the worst possible thing. It's like, okay, might never, just trying to, you know, go around to keep things off the books for whatever
reason. That's it. That's it.
I gave my parents a big wad of cash once, which was, you know, it was under the IRS limit or whatever. But I don't remember why I did it in cash. But my stepfather was very stressed about it. He did not like having all that cash laying around.
Oh, yeah. No, what's the most you can give somebody in cash without them having to declare it? Isn't it like 12? I remember at one time, the company I used to work for, I was one of the original employees. So when we got, the first time we got bought and everybody made a lot of money for that, the founder of the company, the CEO, gave all of the original employees, at that point there was like 9 of us still left with the company, a suitcase with the most cash that you could get without having to declare it to the IRS. So there's like 11 grand or something. It was a suitcase with 11 grand he gave each of us. It was
That's tricky because that's above the limit that you can fly with without declaring it, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, I was lucky. I was living in Naperville at the time, so I just drove home with it. I was a little like Ed Reed.
You didn't need to fly down to deposit it into your overseas account.
I probably went straight to the casino, if I remember correctly.
Looks like the most you can gift a family member is $12,000?
That sounds about right. Because we got $11,000 when we did that little exercise, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, $16,000.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. That's standard reason, I guess, you know, inflation.
Something around there. Don't take my advice, everybody, okay?
Yeah, if you were thinking of going to the bank today to give one of your relatives a five-figure box of cash, just Google it, okay? And don't take Seth's word for it.
Okay, and then, but then there's some other, let's see. In the U.S., a person can give gifts up to $5,340,000 throughout their life without ever needing to pay gift tax.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's like individual, if that's how it's separated by up. It's important that our listeners
feel
know
like,
this.
I feel
Listen,
like we're,
everybody.
Yeah. We're veering into dangerous territory here. All right, Payne and Pendergast, heading into the 8 o'clock hour. There is a big date coming up on one of the, date on the calendar. For one of the most prominent relationships in sports. We will tell you what that is coming up next.